When an archer is shooting for fun, he has all his skill. If he shoots for a brass buckle, he is already nervous. If he shoots for a prize of gold, he goes blind or sees two targets. He is out of his mind. His skill has not changed, but the prize divides him. He cares, he thinks more of winning than of shooting, and the need to win drains him of power.
If the mind is filled with dreams, you cannot see rightly. If the heart is filled with desires, you cannot feel rightly. Because desires and dreams, hopes, the future disturbs you. And whatsoever is in the present. Then you are divided. Desire leads you to the future, and life is here and now. Reality is here and now, and desire leads you into the future. Then you are not here. You see, but still you don't see. You hear, but still you miss. You feel, but the feeling is dim. It cannot be deep. It cannot be penetrating. That's how truth is missed. People go on asking, where to find the divine? Where to find the truth? It is not a question of finding the divine or the truth. It is always here. It has been never anywhere else. It cannot be. It is there where you are, but you are not there. Your mind is somewhere else. Your eyes are filled with dreams. Your heart is filled with desires. You move into the future. And future is illusion. Or you move into the past, and past is already dead. The past is no more. And the future has yet to be. And between these two is the moment of present. That moment is very short, shortest possible. It is atomic. You cannot divide it more. It is indivisible. That moment passes in a flicker of the eye. If a desire enters, you have missed it. If a dream is there, you are missing it. The whole religion consists not in leading you somewhere, but bringing you here and now, to bring you back to the home, to bring you back where you have always been. But the head has gone away, very far away. This head has to be brought back. So God is not to be searched somewhere. Because you are searching somewhere, that's why you are missing him. And he has been here waiting for you. Once it happened, Mullah Nasruddin came to his house, totally drunk. Staggering. He knocked at his own door. Knocked again and again. It was already half past night. The wife came. Nasruddin asked her, "Can you tell me, madam, where Mullah Nasruddin lives?" The one said, this is too much. You are Mulla Nasruddin. Mulla Nasruddin said, that's okay, that I know. But that doesn't answer my question. Where he lives? This is the situation. Drunk with desires, staggering, you knock at your own home. You ask, where is your home? You ask, really, who are you? And this is the home. And you have never left it. Because it is impossible to leave it. It is not something outside you which you can leave and go away. It is your within. It is your very being. Asking where God is foolish. Because you cannot lose Him. It is your within, your innermost being, your very core. It is your existence. You breathe in Him. You live in Him. And otherwise is not possible. The only thing that has happened is your drunkenness. You can't recognize your own face. And unless you come back and become sober, you will go on searching and seeking, and you will go on missing. Tao, Zen, Yoga, Sufism, Hasidism, these are all methods to bring you back, to make you sober again. How to destroy your drunkenness? Why you are so drunk? What makes you so drunk? Why your eyes are so sleepy? Why you are not alert? What is the root cause of it all? The root cause is you desire. Try to understand the nature of desire. Desire is alcoholic. Desire is the greatest drug possible. Marijuana is nothing. LSD is nothing. Desire is the greatest LSD possible, the ultimate in drugs. What is the nature of desire? When you desire, what happens? When you desire, you are creating an illusion in the mind. When you desire, you have already moved from here. No, you are not here. You are absent here. Because the mind is creating a dream. This absentness is your drunkenness. Be present. This very moment, the doors of heaven are open. There is no need even to knock. Because you are not outside heaven, you are inside. Just to be alert and look around without eyes filled with desire. And you will have a belly laughter. You will laugh at the whole joke. What has been happening? It is just like a man dreaming in the night. It happened once, a man was very much disturbed. His nights were simply prolonged nightmares. His whole night was a struggle. It was so painful that he was always scared to go to sleep. And he was always happy to come out of the bed. The whole night was nightmares. He was having very bad dreams, ferocious. And the nature of the dreams consisted that the moment he will fall asleep, he will start seeing that under his bed, lions, dragons, tigers, reptiles, crocodiles, millions of them under this small bed, sitting. So he couldn't sleep in the dream. He couldn't sleep because any moment they will attack. Moving out, coming back, the whole night was just a long disturbance, a torture they had. He was treated medically, but nothing will help. Everything failed. He was analyzed. Psychologists, psychiatrists, nobody could succeed. Then one day, he was coming out of his home laughing. Nobody had seen him laughing. For many years, his face had become hellish, always sad, afraid, scared. So the neighbor asked, "What is the matter? You and laughing? We have not seen you laughing since long. We have completely forgotten that you ever used to laugh. What happened to your nightmares?" The man said, "I told my brother Inga, and he cured me." So the neighbors asked, "Is your brother Inga a great psychoanalyst, psychiatrist or something? How he could cure?" The man said, "He is a carpenter. He simply sat down the legs of my bed." Now no more space. So I slept for the first time. The legs had been cut. You create a space. Desire is the way how to create a space. Greater the desire, more space is created. Because a desire will be fulfilled in 1 year, then you have 1 year's space. You can move in it. And then many reptiles, many dragons, you will have to encounter. This space which is created by desire you call time. If there is no desire, there is no need for time. A single moment exists, not even two moments, because the second is needed only by desire. It is not needed by your existence. Existence is completely fulfilled, total, with one moment. Remember, you think time is something outside you, then you are in a deception. Time is not something outside you. If man disappears from the earth, will there be time? Trees will grow. Rivers will flow. Clouds will still float in the sky. But I ask, will there be time? There will not be any time. Moments. Rather, one moment will be there. When one moment disappears, another comes into existence. Another disappears, another comes into existence. But there is no time as such. Atomic moment exists. Because trees don't desire anything. They don't desire to flower. Flowers will come automatically. That is part of the nature of the tree. Flowers will come. But the tree is not dreaming. The tree is not moving. The tree is not thinking. The tree is not desiring. If man is not there, there will be no time. Eternal moment. You create time by desire. Greater the desire, more time is needed. For materialistic desires, more time is not needed. That's why in the West they say there is only one life. In the East, we have desired moksha. That is the greatest desire possible. No other desire can be greater than that. One life is not enough for moksha. How can you get moksha in one life? You may get a palace, you may arrange a kingdom, you may become very rich, powerful, a Hitler, a Ford. You may become something of this world, but moksha is such a great desire. One life is not enough. So in the East we believe in many lives to be birthed, because more time is needed. Many lives will be needed, only then you can hope that the desire will be fulfilled. I'm not saying whether there are many lives or not, that is not the point. But in the East people believe in many lives because they desire moksha. If there is only one life, then how can you attain it? And if there is only one life, then only material things can be attained. Then a spiritual transformation is not possible. The desire is so big. Millions of lives are needed. That's why East lives so lazily. There is no hurry. Because there is no shortage of time. You will be born again and again and again. Why be in a hurry? Infinite time you have got. So if East is lazy, looks absolutely unaware of time, things move with such a slow flow, it is because of the concept of many lives. If the West is so much time conscious, it is because there is only one life and everything has to be attained in it. If you miss, you miss forever. No second opportunity is possible. Because of this shortage of time, West has become so much tense. So many things to do. And so little time left. And the time is always little. And desires are so many. One is always in a hurry. Running fast. Nobody is moving slowly. Nobody is walking slowly. Everybody is running. And more speed is needed. So the West goes on inventing more speedy vehicles. And there is never satisfaction. The West goes on lengthening human life just to give a little more time to fulfill your desires. But why time is needed? Can't you be here and now without time? Is it not enough this moment? Just sitting near me, no past, no future. This moment in between, which is atomic, which is really as if non-existential, it is so small that you cannot catch hold of it. If you catch, it is already past. If you think, it is in the future. You can be in it, but you cannot catch hold of it. When you catch hold, it is gone. When you think about it, it is not there. When it is there, only one thing can be done. You can live it. That's all. It is so smart that only you can live in it. but it is so vital that it gives life to you. Remember, it is just like the atom, so small it cannot be seen. Nobody has seen yet. Even scientists have not seen yet. You can only see the consequences. They have been able to explode it. Hiroshima and Nagasaki were the consequences. We have seen Hiroshima burning. 10 million people dead. This is the consequence. But nobody has seen what has happened in the atomic explosion. Nobody has seen the atom. Not by bare eyes. There are no instruments yet which can see it. Time is also atomic. This moment is atomic. Nobody can see it. Because when you see it, it's already gone. The time that will be taken in seeing, it is past. The river has flown. The arrow has moved. Nobody has ever seen time. That's why you go on using the word time, but if someone insists to define it, you will be at a loss. Since St. Augustine, somebody asked him, define God. What do you mean when you use the word God? And Augustine said, it is just like time. I can talk about it, but if you insist for the definition, I am at a loss. You can go on asking people, what is time? They will look at their watches and reply. But if you really ask, what is time? If you ask the definition, then watches won't help. Can you define time? Because nobody has seen it. There is no way to see it. If you look, it is gone. If you think, it is not there. When you don't think, when you don't look, when you simply are, it is there. You live it. And Augustine is right. God also can be lived but cannot be seen. Time can be lived but cannot be seen. Time is not a philosophical problem. It is existential. God is also not philosophical. It is existential. People have lived. But if you insist for definition, they will remain silent. They cannot answer. And if you can be in this moment, the doors of all the mysteries are open. So throw all the desires. Remove all dust from your eyes. Be at ease within, not longing for something, not even for God. Because every longing is the same, whether you long for a big car, or a God, or a big house, it makes no difference. Longing is the same. Don't long. Just be. Don't even look. Just be. Don't think. Let this moment be there and you in it. And suddenly, you have everything. Because life is there. Suddenly everything starts hovering on you. And then this moment becomes eternal. And then there is no time. It is always the now. It never ends, never begins. But then you are in it, not an outsider. You have entered the home. You have recognized who you are. Now, try to understand Chantazu Sutra. The need to win. From where this need arises, the need to win? Everybody is in search to be victorious, to be a winner. But why this need arises to win? Because you are not in any way aware that you are already victorious. Life has happened to you. You are already a winner. And nothing more is possible. All that could happen has happened to you. You are already an emperor. And there is no more kingdom to be in. But that you have not recognized. You have not known the beauty of life that has already happened to you. You have not known the silence, the peace, the bliss that is already there. Because you are not aware of the inner kingdom, you always feel that something is needed, some victory to prove that you are not a beggar. It happened. Alexander was coming to India to win, of course. Because if you are not in need to win, you will not go anywhere. Why bother? Athens was beautiful. There was no need to bother for such a long journey. On the way he heard that there lives just by the side of the river one mystic. Diogenes was his name. He had heard many stories about him. In those days, in Athens particularly, only two names were spoken about. One was of Alexander, another was of Diogenes. They were two opposite polarities. Alexander was the emperor and was trying to create a kingdom which goes from this end to the other. The whole world should be in my position. The conqueror, the man in search of victory. And there was Diogenes, the exact opposite pole. He lived naked. Not a single thing he possessed. He used to possess in the beginning a begging bowl to drink water with it, or sometimes to beg food in it. Then one day he saw a dog drinking water from the river. He immediately threw his bowl. He said, "When dogs can do without, why not I? Even if dogs are so intelligent, they can do without the bowl. Am I so stupid to carry this bowl continuously with me? This is the burden." He took that dog as his master. And he invited the dog to be with him. Because he is so intelligent, he was not aware that this is unnecessary a burden to carry this bow. And then the dog remained with him. They used to sleep together, used to take their food together. The dog was the only companion. Somebody asked Diogenes, "Why do you keep the company of a dog?" He said, "He is more intelligent than so-called human beings. Even I was not so intelligent before. Looking at him, watching at him, he has made me more alert. And he lives in the here and now, not bothered about anything, not possessing. And he is so happy. Having nothing, he has everything. I am not yet so content. Some uneasiness remains inside. When I have also become just like him, and then the goal is reached. Alexander has heard about Diogenes, his ecstatic bliss, his silent eyes, mirror-like, just like the blue sky without any clouds. And this man lived naked, not even clothes were needed. Somebody said he is just by the riverside, and we are passing. He is not very far away. So Alexander wanted to see him. He went. It was morning, a winter morning, and Diogenes was taking his sun bath, lying on the sand, naked, enjoying the morning, the sun sovereign on him. Everything so beautiful, silent, the river flowing by. Alexander thought what to say. A man like Alexander cannot think except about things and possessions. So he looked at Diogenes and he said, "I am Alexander the Great. If you need something, tell me. I can be of much help. I would like to help you." Diogenes laughed and he said, "I don't need anything. Just stand a little bit aside, because you are blocking my son. That's all you can do to me. And remember, don't block anybody's son. That's all one can do. Don't stay in my way. And nothing else is needed." Alexander looked at this man. He must have felt that he is a beggar before this man, who needs nothing. And I need the whole world. And even then, I'm not going to be satisfied. Even this world is not enough. Said Alexander, "I am happy to see you. I have never seen such a contented man." Diogenes said, "But there is no problem. If you want to be so contented, come and lie down by my side. Have the sun bath. Forget the future and drop the past. Nobody is hindering you." Alexander laughed, of course, a superficial laugh, and he said, "You are right. But the time is not yet right. One day I would also like to relax like you." Diogenes said then that one day will never come. What you need to relax, if I can relax a beggar, what else is needed? Why this struggle, this effort, these wars, this conquering, this win, this need to win? Said Alexander, "When I have become the victorious, when I have conquered the whole world, I would like to come and learn from you and sit by your side and lie down here on this bank." Diogenes said, "But if I can lie down on this bank and relax right now, why wait for the future? And why go around the whole world creating misery for yourself and others, and just in the end to come to me and relax here? I am already relaxing. What is the need to win? You have to prove yourself. You feel so inferior within. You feel so vacant and empty. You feel such a nobodiness inside. The need to prove comes. You have to prove that you are somebody. And unless you have proved how you can be at ease, these are the two ways. Try to understand, these are the only ways. One way is to go out and prove that you are somebody. Another way is to go in and realize that you are nobody. If you go out, you will never be able to prove that you are somebody. The need will remain. It may rather increase. The more you prove, the more you will feel. Standing before Diogenes, Alexander felt like a beggar. He will feel always. Because just by proving to others that somebody, you cannot become somebody. Deep down, the nobodiness remains. It goes on biting in the heart. You know that you are nobody. Kingdoms won't help. Because kingdoms will not go in and fill the gap. Nothing can go in. The without will remain without. The within will remain within. There is no meeting. You may have all the wealth of the world, but how you can bring it in and fill the emptiness? No. When all the wealth is there, you will still feel empty, rather more, because now the contrast will be there. That's why a Buddha leaves his palace, seeing all the wealth, feeling the inner emptiness. He feels all is useless. Another way is to come within. Not to try this nobodiness, but to realize it. This is what Chantasu is saying. Become an empty boat. Just go in and realize that you are nobody. The moment you realize you are nobody, you explode into a new dimension. Because when somebody realizes nobody, he is also realizing that he is all. You are not somebody. Because you are all, how the all can be somebody? Somebody will always be a part. God cannot be somebody because he is all. He cannot possess anything because he is the whole. Only beggars possess. Because possessions have limitations. Possessions cannot become unlimited. Somebodyness has a boundary. Somebodyness cannot be without boundaries, it cannot be infinite. Nobodiness is infinite, just like allness. Really, those are the same. If you are moving without, you will feel inner being as nobody. If you are moving within, you will feel the same nobodiness as all. That's why Buddha says, Sunya, the absolute white is Brahma. To be nobody is to realize that you are all. Really, to realize that you are somebody is to realize that you are not all. And nothing less will do. Another way is to move within, not to fight with this nobodiness, not to try to fill this emptiness, but to realize it and become one with it. Be the empty boat. And then all the seas are yours. Then you can move into the uncharted. Then there is no hindrance for this boat. Nobody can block its path. No maps are needed. This boat will move into the infinite. Now everywhere is the goal. But one has to move within. The need to win is to prove that you are somebody. And the only way we know to prove is to prove in the eyes of others. Because their eyes become reflections. Looking in their eyes, Alexander will see that he is somebody. Standing near Diogenes, he felt he is nobody. Because Diogenes will not recognize that you are Alexander or something. Rather, Alexander must have felt foolish. It is said that he told Diogenes that if God gives me another opportunity to be born, I would like to be Diogenes rather than Alexander next time, because the mind always moves in the future. This very time he can become Diogenes, there is no barrier. Nobody is preventing him. To become Alexander, there will be millions of barriers, because everybody will prevent him. Because when you want to prove that you are somebody, you hurt everybody's ego. And they will all try that you are nothing. Unless you kill them, unless you succeed in destroying them, they will go on saying that you are nothing. What you are thinking yourself to be? Who do you think you are? You have to prove, and it is a very hard way, very violent, destructive. There is no barrier to be a Diogenes. Alexander felt the beauty of this man, the grace. He said, I would like, but next time, if God gives me another opportunity to be born, I would like to be Diogenes. Diogenes laughed and said, if I am asked, only one thing is certain, I would not like to be Alexander ever. In the eyes of Diogenes, Alexander must have seen there is no recognition of his victories. Suddenly he must have felt the sinking sensation, the death-like sensation that I am nobody. He must have escaped or run from Diogenes as soon as possible. This man was dangerous. And it is said, Diogenes hunted him his whole life. Wherever he went, Diogenes was with him like a shadow. In the night, in the dreams, Diogenes was there laughing. And it is said, a beautiful story, that they died on the same day. Diogenes must have waited this man to follow. They died on the same day. And while passing the river which divides this world in that, Alexander met Diogenes again. And met a second meeting. A second encounter, more dangerous than the before. Alexander was ahead because he has died few minutes before. It has to be so because Diogenes has to follow. He must have waited. Hearing the noise that somebody is behind in the river, he looked back. Diogenes was laughing. He must have got absolutely numb. Because this time, things are absolutely different. He was also naked. Because you cannot carry your clothes to the other world. This time he was again absolutely nobody. Not an emperor. But Diogenes was the same. All that death can take, he had already renounced. So death couldn't take anything from him. He was just the same as on that river bank. He was on this river just the same. Just to be non-challenged. just to give himself courage and confidence, Alexander also laughed and he said, "Great, wonderful. Again, the meeting of an emperor and the greatest beggar. The meeting of the greatest emperor and the greatest beggar." Diogenes said, "You are absolutely right, only you are a little confused about who is the emperor and who is the beggar. This is a meeting of the greatest emperor and the greatest beggar, but the emperor is behind and the beggar is ahead. And I tell you, Alexander, the first meeting was also the same. You were the beggar, but you thought I was the beggar. Now look at yourself. What have you gained by gaining and winning the whole world? What is the need to win? Why you want to prove? Because in your own eyes you know that you are a non-entity. You are nothing. And this nothingness becomes a pain in the heart. You suffer because you are nothing. So you have to prove in the eyes of others. You have to create some opinion in others' mind that you are somebody, you are not nothing. And looking in their eyes, you will gather the opinion, public opinion. And by that public opinion, you will create an image. This image is the ego. It is not your real self. It is a reflected glory. It is not your own. It is collected from others' eyes. And this type of man will always be afraid of others, because they can take back whatsoever they have given. A politician is always afraid of the public, because they can take back whatsoever they have given. It is just borrowed. His self is a borrowed self. If you are afraid of others, you are a slave. You are not a master. A Diogenes is not afraid of others. You cannot take anything from him because he has not borrowed anything. He has the self. You have only the ego. This is the difference between the self and the ego. Ego is a borrowed self. Public opinion, it depends on others. Self is your authentic being. It is not borrowed, it is yours. Nobody can take it back. Look, he has beautiful lines to say. When an archer is shooting for fun, he has all his skill. For fun. When an archer is shooting for fun, he has all his skill. Because when you are playing, you are not trying to prove that you are somebody. You are at ease at home. While playing, just as a fun, you are not worried what others think about you. Have you seen a father just in a mock fight with his child, fighting, and he will get defeated? He will lie down and the child will sit on his chest and will laugh and will say that I am the winner, and the father will be happy. It's just a fun. In fun you can get defeated and be happy. Fun is not serious. It is not related with the ego. Ego is always serious. So remember, if you are serious, you will always be in turmoil, inner turmoil. A saint is always in play, as if shooting for the fun. He is not interested to shoot a particular target. He is just enjoying. One German philosopher, Eugen Herigel, went to Japan to learn meditation. And in Japan, they use all types of skills to teach meditation. Archery also used. Herigel was a perfect archer. 100% he will reach to the target exactly. He will never miss. So he went to a master to learn meditation through archery because he was already skilled in it. 3 years. And Herigel started feeling that this is wastage. Because the master went on insisting that you should not shoot. Let the arrow leap by itself. You should not be there when you aim. Let the arrow aim itself. This is absurd. For a Western man, particularly, it is absolutely absurd. What do you mean, let the arrow shoot by itself? How the arrow can shoot by itself? I have to do something. And he continued, he will never miss the target. But master said, target is not the target at all. You are the target. I am not looking whether you are missing the target or not. That is a mechanical skill. I am looking at you, whether you are there or not. Shoot in fun. Enjoy it. Don't try to prove that you never miss the target. Don't try to prove the ego. It is already there. You are there. There is no need to prove. Be at ease and allow the arrow to shoot itself. Herigel could not understand. He tried and tried and he said again and again, when my aims are 100% correct, why don't you give me the certificate? The Western mind is always interested in the end result. And the East is always interested in the beginning, not in the end. End is useless. In the beginning. In the archer, not in the target. So the master will say no. Then, completely disappointed, Herigel asked to leave. He said, then I will have to go 3 years, too much. And nothing gained, and you go on saying no. And you go on saying that you are still the same. The day he was to leave, he had just gone to say goodbye. The master was teaching other disciples. This morning, Herigel was not interested. He was to leave. He had dropped the whole project. So he just was waiting there. When the master is not engaged, he will say his goodbye and leave. Sitting on the bench, for the first time he looked at the master. For the first time in 3 years he looked at the master. Really, he was not doing anything, as if the arrow was shooting itself. The master was not serious. He was playing. He was in fun. There was nobody who was interested to reach a target. Because ego is always target-oriented. Fun has no target to reach. Fun is in the beginning where the arrow leaves the bow. If it shoots, that is accidental. If it reaches the target, that is not relevant. Whether it reaches or misses, that is not the point. But when the arrow leaves the bow, the archer is in fun. Enjoying, not serious. When you are serious, you are tense. When you are not serious, you are relaxed. And when you are relaxed, you are. When you are tense, the ego is you are clouded. For the first time, Herigel looked, because now he was not interested. It was none of his business now. He had dropped the whole thing. He was living, so there was no question to be serious. He has accepted his failure. Nothing was to be proved. He looked. For the first time, his eyes were not obsessed with the target. He looked at the master as if the arrow was shooting itself from the bow. The master was only giving it energy. He was not shooting. He was not doing anything. The whole thing was effortless. He looked, and for the first time he understood what he meant. As if enchanted, he reached near the master, took the bow in his hand, pulled the arrow, and the master says, "You have reached. This is what I was telling you for all these 3 years to do, and the arrow has not yet left the bow." And the master said, "Finished. The target is attained." Now he was in fun. Now he was not serious. He was not goal-oriented. This is the difference. Fun is not goal-oriented. There is no goal to it. Fun itself is the goal. It is the intrinsic value. Nothing outside it. You enjoy it, that's all. There is no purpose to it. You played it, that's all. When an archer is shooting for fun, he has all his skill. When you are shooting for fun, you are not in conflict. There are not two. There is no tension. Your mind is not going anywhere. Your mind is not going at all. So you are whole. The skill is there. It is said of one Zen painter, a Zen master, he was making a drawing, a design for a new pagoda, a new temple. And this was his habit, to have his chief disciple by the side. He will draw the design and he will look at the disciple and ask, "What do you think?" And the disciple said, "Not worth, not worthy of you." So he will throw it. This happened 99 times. 3 months passed. And the king was continuously asking when the design will be complete, when the work will start. And one day it happened. The master was making the design. The ink was dry, so he told the disciple to go out and prepare more ink. The disciple went out, and when he came in, he said, "What? You have done it. But how you couldn't do for 3 months?" The master says, "Because of you. You were sitting by my side and I was divided. You were looking at me and I was target-oriented. It was not fun. When you were not there, I got relaxed. I said, nobody, there is nobody. I became whole. This design I have not done. It has come by itself. For 3 months it was not coming because I was the doer." When an archer is shooting for fun, he has all the skill, because his whole being is available. And when the whole being is available, you have a beauty, a grace, a totally different quality of being. When you are divided, serious, tense, you are ugly. You may succeed, but your success will be ugly. You may prove to somebody that you are somebody, but you are not proving anything. You are simply creating a false image. But when you are total, relaxed, whole, nobody may know about you. but you are. And this wholeness is the benediction, the beatitude, the blessing that happens to a meditative mind, that happens in meditation. Meditation means wholeness. So remember, meditation should be a fun. It should not be a work. You should not do it like a religious man. You should do it like a gambler's play, for the fun. You should be like a sportsman, not like a businessman. It should be a fun, then all the skill is available. Then it will flower by itself, you will not be needed. No effort is needed. Simply your whole being has to be available, your whole energy has to be available, then the flower comes by itself. If he suits for a brass buckle, he is already nervous. If he is in a competition, just for a brass buckle, if something is to be achieved, some result is there, he is already nervous, afraid. Fear comes in whether I will succeed or not. He is divided. One part of the mind says, maybe you will succeed. Another part says, maybe you will be a failure. Now the whole skill is not available. Now he is half-half. And whenever you are divided, your whole being becomes ugly and ill. You are diseased. If he suits for a prize of gold, he goes blind. Or sees two targets, he is out of his mind. Go to the market and see people who are after gold. They are blind. The gold blinds as nothing else blinds a man. The gold covers the eyes completely. When you are too much after success, too much after the result, too much ambitious, when you are too much after the gold medal, then you are blind. And you start seeing two targets. Your vision becomes double. You are so drunk. I have heard Mullah Nasruddin was teaching to his son in a bar that always remember when to stop. Alcohol is good, but one needs to know when to stop. And through my experience I tell you, look at that corner. When these four people sitting by the table start looking at it, stop. The boy said, but father, I see only two people sitting there. When the mind is drunken, vision becomes double. And gold makes you so unconscious, so drunken. Targets are two. And you are in such a hurry to reach. You are nervous, trembling inside. This is the state Chantazu calls he is out of his mind, and everybody is out of his mind. It is not only mad people who are out of mind. You are also out of the mind. The difference is only of degrees, not of quality. A little more, and you can cross the boundary any moment, as if on the 99 degrees you are. 100 degrees and you boil, and you have crossed the degree. The difference between those who are in madhouses and those who are out is only of quantity, not of quality. Everybody is out of his mind, because everybody is after the results, goals, purpose. Something has to be achieved, then nervousness, then inner trembling. Then you cannot be still within. And when you tremble inside, the target becomes 2 or even 4 or 8. And then it is impossible to become an archer. A perfect archer is always the archer who is in fun. A perfect man lives life as a fun, as a play. Look at Krishna's life. Had Chaitanya known about it, it would have been beautiful. Krishna's life is a fun. Buddha, Mahavir, Jesus, somehow or other they look a little serious, as if something has to be achieved, the moksha, the nirvana, the desirelessness. But Krishna is absolutely purposeless, the flute player, just living in fun, dancing with girls, enjoying singing, as if there is nowhere to go. All is here. So why bother about the results? Everything is right now available. Why not enjoy it? Krishna is the perfect man. If fun is the sign of perfect man. In India, we never call Krishna's life Krishna Charitra. His character, we never call it. We call it Krishna Leela, his play. Krishna's play. It is not a character. It is not purposeful. It is absolutely purposeless. It is just like a small child. You cannot ask, what are you doing? You cannot ask, what is the meaning? He is enjoying. Just running after butterflies. What he will achieve? Just jumping in the sun. To what purpose this effort will lead him? Nowhere. He is not going anywhere. We call him, he is childish. We think ourselves mature. But I will tell you, that when you are really mature, you will again become childlike. Then your life will again become a fun. You will enjoy it, every bit of it. You will not be serious. A deep laughter will spread all over your life. It will be more like a dance and less like a business. It will be more like singing, humming in the bathroom, less like calculating in the office. It will not be mathematics. It will be just enjoyment. His skill has not changed, but the price divides him. He cares He thinks more of winning than of shooting, and the need to win drains him of power. If you look so important, so powerless, helpless, it is because of you. Nobody else is draining you of your power. You have infinite sources of power. Non-ending. But you look drained. Every moment you look as if you are going to fall. No energy left. Where all energy is going? You are creating a conflict within yourself. Your skill is the same. His skill has not changed. But the price divides him. He cares. I have heard one story. It happened in a village. A poor man. The son of a beggar. He was young. Healthy. So young and so healthy that when the elephant of the king will pass from the village, he will just catch the tail of the elephant and the elephant will not be able to move. Sometimes it became very embarrassing to the king because he will be sitting on it and the whole market will gather and people will laugh. And the son of a beggar. The king asked his prime minister, something has to be done, this is insulting. Because I have become afraid to pass from that village. And that boy sometimes meet me in other villages also. And anywhere he can catch hold of the tail and the elephant will not move. He is so powerful. Do something to drain his energy. The Prime Minister said, I will have to go and to consult some wise man. Because I don't know how to drain his energy. There is nothing to drain his energy because he is a beggar. If he had a shop, the energy will be drained. If he was working as a clerk in an office, the energy will be drained. If he was a master in a primary school, the energy will be drained. But he has nothing to do. He lives like a fun. And people love him. So he is never in any shortage of food. People give him food, milk. And he is happy and he eats and he sleeps. It is difficult. But I will go. So he went to a wise old man. The wise old man said, you do one thing. Go and tell the boy that you will give him 1 golden rupee every day if he can do a small work. And the work is very small. He has to go in the temple of the village and put the lamp on. Just to light the lamp, to lift the lamp on. That's all. And 1 gold rupee you give him every day. The Prime Minister said, but how it will help? This may make him even more energetic. Because 1 rupee he will get, he will feed more. He will not even bother to beg. The wise man said, you don't worry. You simply do what I say. It was done. And the next week, when the king passed, the boy tried. But he was a failure. He couldn't stop the elephant. He was dragged by the elephant. What happened? Care entered, anxiety entered. He has to remember every evening. 24 hours he has to remember. He has to go to the temple and put the light on. That became an anxiety. That divided his whole being. Even in his sleep he started to dream. That it is evening, what are you doing? Go and put the light on and take your 1 rupee. And then he started to collect those golden rupees. Now 7, now 8. And now he started to calculate that within such and such a time I will have 100 gold rupees, and then they will grow to 200. And mathematics came in. Fun was lost. And just a small thing has he had to do to put the light on. Just a single minute affair, not even single minute, just a momentary thing. But it became a worry. It drained him all of energy. And if you are drained, there is no wonder. Because you have so many temples and so many limbs to put on and off. So much calculation in your life, it is not a fun. His skill was not changed. The skill is the same. But the archer, when he is shooting for fun, has all his skill available. His skill is not changed, but the prize divides him. He cares. Anxiety enters. Nervousness comes in. He thinks more of winning. Now he is not concerned with shooting. The question is how to win, not how to shoot. He has moved from the beginning to the end. Now the means is not important, the end is important. And whenever the end is important, your energy is divided. Because all that can be done is to be done with the means, not with the ends. Ends are not in your hands, says Krishna in Gita to Arjuna. Don't be concerned with the end, with the result. You simply do whatsoever is to be done here and now. And leave the result to me, to God. Don't ask what will happen. Nobody knows. You simply leave it to God, to fate. Whatsoever happens, you simply do whatsoever is to be done. Be concerned with the means and don't think of the end. Don't be result-oriented. This situation is beautiful and worth thinking with Shantazu's sentences, because Arjuna was an archer. The greatest archer India has produced. He was the perfect archer. But the end entered in the mind. He was never worried. Before it has never happened. His archery was perfect. His skill was total, absolute. But looking in that war field of Kurukshetra, two armies standing, confronting each other. He looked, he became worried. What was the worry? The worry was this, that on both the sides are friends. It was a friendly affair. A war between cousin brothers. So everybody was interlinked. Those who were on the other side, they were also relatives. Those who were on this side, they were also relatives. All the families of relatives were divided. It was a rare war, a family war. Krishna was fighting with Arjuna and his army was fighting from the other part. Because Krishna said that you both love me, so you have to divide half and half. One party can have me, another party can have my armies. Duryodhana was foolish. The other party leaders, he thought, what we will do of Krishna alone? His army is big. So he said, I will choose your army. And Krishna was with Arjuna and he was happy. Because one Krishna is more than all the worlds. What armies can do, unconscious, sleepy people. One man awakened is worth all. And he became the real help. When the time came, when Arjuna was confused, and his mind became divided. In Gita it is said, looking at these two armies, he became puzzled. And this is the word he said to Krishna, that my energy is drained. I feel nervous. I feel impotent. My power has left me. A perfect man of skill, a perfect archer, his bow is known as Gandiva, the name of his bow. He said, the Gandiva feels to be too heavy to me. I have become so powerless. My body is numb, and I cannot think and cannot see. Everything has become confused, because these are all relatives, and I will have to kill them. And what will be the result? Murder. And so many people killed, and what will I will gain out of it? A worthless kingdom. So I am not interested in fighting. This seems to be too costly. I would like to escape and become a sannyasi. I would like to go to the forest and meditate. This is not for me. My energy is drained. Krishna told him that don't think of the results. That is not in your hands. And don't think that you are the doer, because if you are the doer, then the end is in your hands. Doer is always the divine. You are just the instrument. Be concerned with the here now, the means, and leave the end to me. And I tell you, Arjuna, that these people are already dead. They are fated to die. You are not going to murder them. You are just the instrument to reveal the fact to them that they are murdered. Otherwise they are already murdered. As far as I can see, I see them dead. They have reached to the point where death happens. You are just an instrument. Sanskrit has a beautiful word. There is no equivalent to it in English. It is nimitta. Nimitta means you are not the doer, you are not the cause. Not even you are not the cause, you are just the nimitta. It means the cause is in the hands of the divine, he is the doer, you are just a vehicle to him. You are just like a postman. Postman is the nimitta. He comes and delivers a letter to you. If the letter insults you, you don't become angry to him. You don't say, why you brought this letter to me? Postman is not concerned, he is nimitta. He has not written the letter. He has not caused it. He is not concerned at all. He has just fulfilled his duty. You will not be angry to him. You will not say, why you carried this letter to me. Krishna said to Arjuna, you are just like a postman. You have to deliver death to them. You are not the killer. The death is from the divine. They have earned it already. You don't bother. If you are not going to kill them, then somebody else. If this postman will not deliver, then somebody else will deliver the letter. It is not a question that if you are not, or if you are on a holiday, or if you are ill, then the letter will not be delivered. A substitute postman will do. But the letter has to be delivered. So you don't get bothered. You unnecessarily don't get worried. You are just a nimitta. Neither the cause of it, nor the doer of it. Just an instrument. Be concerned with the means. Don't think about the ends. Because once you think about the ends, your skill is lost, you are divided. That's why you are feeling drained, Arjuna. Your energy has not gone anywhere. It has become a conflict within you, are divided. And you are fighting with yourself. One part says, go ahead. One part says, this is not good. Your wholeness is lost. And whenever wholeness is not lost, one feels important. Such a powerful man like Arjuna, he says, I cannot carry this Gandhi. This bow is too heavy for me. I have become nervous. I feel a fear, deep fear and anxiety arising in me. I cannot fight. The skill is the same. Nothing has changed, but the mind is divided. Whenever you are divided, you are powerless. When you are undivided, you are powerful. Desires divide you. Meditation undivides you. Desires lead you to the future. Meditation brings you to the present. Remember this as a conclusion. Don't move to the future. Whenever you feel your mind is moving to the future, jump back to the present immediately. Don't try to complete it. Immediately, the moment you think, the moment you have become alert that the mind has moved into the future and the desire, jump back to the present, be at home. You will again and again lose it. Again and again miss it because it has become a long habit. But sooner or later, more and more you will be at home. And then life is fun. It is a play. And then you are so full of energy, you overflow. A flood of vitality. And that flood is bliss. Impotent, drained, you cannot be ecstatic. How can you dance? For dance you will need infinite energy. Drained, how can you sing? Singing is always an overflow. Dead as you are, how can you pray? Only when you are totally alive, a thankfulness arises from the heart, a gratitude. That gratitude is prayer. Enough for today?